Welcome back to Word on the Heels with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Signal-Reed. Today, to celebrate the second anniversary of Word on the Heels, we are featuring a variety of readings from work published in 2015. But before we hear from more readers, we thought you'd like to know a little more about the show itself. It's a team effort all round. Not only do we co-host, but we also share in the preparation of the shows. Felicity contacts potential interviewees and draws up the outlines for each show. I manage the techie stuff here in the recording studio and also do the post-production editing and preparation of the MP3 files for posting to our website. Felicity manages our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all the programs we broadcast are archived. In the future, we'd like to have podcasts of our shows on Northumberland 89.7's website too. We both keep our ears open to find interesting writers, editors, publishers, and so on to interview on this series, and we're always happy to receive suggestions from you, our listeners. You can leave them at our website. This is another thing we'd like to encourage and expand, a conversation with our listeners.
And talking of conversations, we begin our next round of readings with a conversation between Kurt and his dad from Pat Calder's novel Roadblock. It's quite a traumatic event for young Kurt, who has just lost his little sister. Then we hear about another traumatic event, when Molly Brandt and her children are driven from their home. This piece comes from Peggy Diamond Levy's newest biography, Molly Brandt, Mohawk, Loyalist and Diplomat. Then to lighten the mood, a piece about a dance class from Donna Wootton's novel, Isadora and Lucia. And finally, a poem from Katie Hoogendam, My Mother's Raspberry Patch. This poem was published in Hill Spirit Stew, a second anthology of stories and poems from the Spirit of the Hills Writers Group in Northumberland, published by local publisher Blue Denim Press last May.
At noon, he bundled up his backpack and rode away on his bike. He pedaled through the nature reserve to the stream. All he was capable of this afternoon was throwing pebbles in the water and watching the ripples circle away from the center. Why did a butterfly only last one season? Why did Jenny only have 3 years? How long would he have? Even his parents couldn't answer these questions, so what was the point of school? When he arrived home at 4 o'clock, his mother grabbed him to her chest. She had been crying. "I thought you were lost, too," she said, taking his face in her hands. "Don't you ever run away again." "Mom, I didn't run away. I'm here." He pushed himself from her, went to his room, propped his back against a pillow to listen to Brian Adams. When his father came home from work, he spent some time in the kitchen before Kurt heard footsteps coming down the hall. "How was your day?" his father asked, turning off Kurt's kettle blaster. When Kurt just looked at him, his father said, "Well then, do you want to hear about my day?" Kurt nodded. "A few people shook my hand and mumbled at me. All day I was display number one, folks watching me out of the corners of their eyes. Is he going to break down?" "Well, I didn't, but I'm worn out with trying not to." He wiped his brow and reached for Kurt's hand. "How do you think your mother's day went? She had nobody staring at her. She's having an awkward cup of tea with the minister, and the school phones to say you're missing. So, she had a great afternoon. Understand?" Kurt flung himself across the bed into his father's arms. "Sorry." The word was muffled into a shirt still sweaty from work. "I hate school. It's stupid." His father held him tight. "We're in this together. You, your mother, and I. We all have to pull an oar. My job is to go to work every day, whether I feel like it or not. Your mother's is to run the house and keep us fed and decent. Your job is to attend school. No ifs, ands, or buts. I'm sorry, son, but that's life. We carry on." Kurt lifted his head and looked at his father. "How's that supposed to help Jenny?" His father's eyes grew wet and he blinked fast. "Jenny's beyond help, you know that, son. Don't make me say it." Kurt felt hot color rising in his face. "Now, You and I are going into the kitchen and eat whatever your mother has prepared for us, and then we're going to thank her. Got that?
Yes, sir, Kurt gave in.
You'll have to grow up faster than other kids your age, son. It's the nasty truth.
Shortly after my father's death in 1774, she begins, we left Johnson Hall, and Mother took us all back to her former home in Canajoharie. Mother insisted on staying on her own property there in the little Mohawk village, even though she'd been warned by General Herkimer, a neighbor and a former friend, that her life was in danger. Mother was not afraid, though, and she promised Herkimer that she would remain neutral, the wish of most of the Six Nations people. She would not side with either the British or the Colonials. This wasn't enough for Herkimer, however, and he threatened her repeatedly that if we didn't leave, we'd all be taken to jail in Albany. One night, shortly after we'd all gone to bed, someone came banging on our door, and several men entered the house demanding of Mother to know the whereabouts of her brother, Captain Joseph Brant. He wasn't with us, and Mother invited the men to search the house if they didn't believe her. They did just that, beginning their search in the sleeping rooms, drawing back the curtains on our beds. Of course, all they found was us children. I was terrified. A few nights later, Mother got word that we were to be forcibly removed on a specific night, even told the exact hour they would come for us. Immediately, she sent us to the safety of the home of a trusted friend. She and the servants remained behind, keeping watch through the night. The next day, when Mother sent the servants to see how we were doing, they told us that at 2 o'clock in the morning, they'd seen several persons outside Mother's house. No one had entered, but we were so frightened by the servant's tale that we all scrambled back into our clothes, convinced that we were about to be seized by these unknown persons. The neighbor hid us behind a screen in a nook in her house until Mother could send for us the next day. Mother knew it was no longer safe for us to stay in the country. We fled Canajoharie, Mother, 7 children, and our 4 servants. As we began our journey, we passed within sight of Johnson Hall. It broke our hearts to see lights in the windows of our former home. Someone else was living there, and we, the rightful owners, were sneaking away in the dark in fear for our lives.
Canadian Lorena McKennett, Helen said, directing her words to the class. I downloaded the songs from iTunes for our visitor. Again, for Isadora, we are going to begin in small groups instead of individually. For some organized improvisation, make groups of 3, please. Since Isadora is new to the class and has popped in mid-session, I think it would help to have a couple of more experienced movers with her. Donna and Craig volunteered to work with me. I put away my mat and joined them on the floor. Right now, we're going to work on tension and relaxation through lift and suspend, opposing drop and rebound. Seeing my confusion, Craig demonstrated. Tension, he said, curling his fists into his chest, then lifting them upwards and holding. Relaxation, he said, dropping his arms to the floor, then lifting his torso, he curved his spine. Rebound, you try, he said, standing upright. I mirrored his actions. Good, Craig said. The music began. Recognize the piece, he asked. Just stay in the middle. We'll move around you. They were a frenzy of activity. I had barely caught my breath and told my body to move when the tempo changed. Slowly, I started to imitate the pair when, once again, the piano started racing and swirling dervishes became a blur. But I knew the music would become calm again. That much I remembered about Wild and Lustig. The tempo went to extremes. The final notes were quick, but light, not crazed. Breathe in, Craig coached. Inhaling, I expanded my chest to the final chords. Still, Craig said. Exhaling, I stood with a heaving chest. Now you are going to travel, Helen instructed. At the end of your travel, you will join with the other group to make 6. So when the music ends, I expect to see 2 groups of 6 on the floor. Don't rush into your groups. There is plenty of music. Time to explore the space and travel from place to place. Use all the floor. This is a journey. Let the music guide you. I want to see different levels. Take turns being the leader, but remember, do not talk. Do not give signals. The natural leaders will emerge.
My mother's raspberry patch. In my mother's raspberry patch, I learned that if you want fruit from the stalk, you have to endure blood on your hands. To be patient with resistance, fruit to flesh. To be at once violent and gentle, the allegiance of skin to root. Only when your hands are red with guilt, I learned, can you return home. There your work will be washed and boiled and canned, transfigured into jam, adulterated beyond recognition in the kitchen. The patch, the blood, the clinging, just a memory, now forgotten.
You've just heard Pat Calder reading from her novel Roadblock, Peggy Diamond Levy reading from her biography Molly Brandt, Mohawk, Loyalist and Diplomat, Donna Wooten reading from her novel Isadora and Lucia, and Katie Hoogendam reading My Mother's Raspberry Patch from the anthology Hill Spirits 2. And so you have it, a really mixed bag of writing styles and topics to celebrate the second anniversary of Word on the Hills.
And as we come to the end of the second anniversary show, Felicity and I wanted to say a big thank you to you, our listeners. Without you, there would be no Word on the Hills, and we hope that you will continue to tune in to Word on the Hills in the weeks to come. Remember, you can find all our previous shows archived at our website, www.wordonthehills.com. Or you can join us live on Sundays at 1 p.m. or early in the morning on Thursdays at 1 a.m. right here on Northumberland 897 Truly Local Radio.